Welcome to the My Story podcast interviews. I'm Malcolm Bennett, and today our interview is with Chris Chinnery. Chris, I'm calling you Chris. Are you happy with people calling you Chris?
Yes, I've always been Chris. When I was at grammar school, there were five people called Chris in my class, so we all had different Chris, Chrissy, Christine, or something to identify us.
So how many were in the class?
It was about 23, 24. And there were five Patricias too.
Oh, wow. So five Chrises and five Patricias. I wasn't sure whether to call you Chris or not, but there you are. Everybody calls you Chris. You did mention that you was born in Exeter, but then you moved away. Can you just explain to listeners your early life?
Yes, I was born in Exeter. My dad, after the RAF, went to Newcastle to train as a probation officer. And he was there for 2 years. And my mother kept everything going by just doing dressmaking. Then when Dad left, I was five, and he got a job in Leicester, and we moved house to Leicester.
I suppose really all your education was in Leicester.
Yes, it was.
What sort of schools you attended?
I went to a local infant and junior school near where I lived, and then later on I took the 11 plus and I went to a grammar school.
Now, I don't want to give your age away, but we're probably talking about the 1950s here, your schooling?
51.
Ooh, 51. Yes, a few years back now. Your secondary school, what happened there?
I went to secondary school, and although I passed the 11 plus, they never thought I was very clever, and I wasn't very clever. I was hopeless at memorising things, and every exam seemed to be memory stuff. And I wasn't very good at that. I was more practical. So I didn't do very well. So when it came to choosing A-levels, they wouldn't let me do them. They would let me do cookery, but they made me do business studies and I didn't do shorthand, typing and all sorts of things like that, which I was very annoyed about. But I did it.
That was probably the time when they weren't encouraging girls to go into engineering or other aspects. I suppose cookery and sewing, they considered that the natural thing to go into. But it sounds as though you were fighting against that.
Well, most of us at grammar school either went into teaching or nursing. There wasn't very much else. Very few people went to university. Out of a year of 23, 24 kids, there'd only be maybe one or two that went to university. The rest of us went into vocational things.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do at that particular time?
Very much so. All through my growing up, I had loved reading stories to kids and doing things. I'd been a Sunday school teacher since I was 14. When we moved church, I was 14 then, and when we moved church, they used to have church meetings on a Saturday. They got fed up with all the kids running round during the church meeting. They knew I was good at telling stories, so they used to send all the kids and me out into the back hall, and I would tell stories for an hour and a half until the meeting was finished. I just loved it, and I knew then that I was meant to be a teacher.
So teaching was in your sights. Now, you mentioned church. Were you brought up in a Christian background, or how did that come about?
Yes, I was brought up in a Plymouth Brethren church. My dad was actually Church of England originally, but my mother was Exclusive Brethren. They both moved a bit and got in the middle and went to Open Brethren.
When you was in Leicester then, the church you went to there, that what denomination was that then?
That was a Brethren church, yes.
You've now got a bit of a taste for teaching and enjoying it by all accounts. So how did you pursue that?
Well, while I was at school, they didn't think that was possible. They had my parents in and said, she'll never get into teacher training. She's not the right material, da-di-da. I just went along with it, did my A-levels, and then when I'd finished them, I applied, and much to their amazement, I did get in.
That was teacher training that you went through. Now, just tell the listeners where that teacher training was.
I went to St. Osis College in Clacton-on-Sea. It was in a whole range of what had been hotels at one time. It was an all-female teacher training college. I really did well there. I really found my niche and got over my shyness, because I was never any good at standing up in front of anything other than children to talk. But while I was at college, we had to do all sorts of things. I got over my shyness and grew in confidence there.
You mentioned Clacton-on-Sea, but you also there's a place called St. Oaths nearby. So was it actually Clacton-on-Sea or at St. Oaths?
No, it was Cords and Oasis, but it was at Clacton-on-Sea.
So, Clacton-on-Sea, well, in the 50s and 60s, was probably a bit of a rave place to be. Was you a bit of a raver then?
Well, there were three of us at college who belonged to the Plymouth Brethren, and we used to help on a Saturday run a coffee bar for the Mods and Rockers. And we used to get all the Mods and Rockers, and we made them sit on opposite sides of the room. We never had any fights in there, but there were lots of fights outside. And my parents used to get very nervous about me. You know, I'd tell them stories of things and they would get very anxious about it. But we used to sit at coffee tables with our Bibles open, and we sang, the three of us, at these things with guitars. And all we sang was Christian songs.
Wow, you mentioned guitars. Do you play an instrument?
I did when I was teaching in primary school. I would play, and when I ran, Colin and I ran youth groups for 28 years, and I played for that. But I'm not very musical at all, really. It was more the need to do it.
Wow. Have you got any stories about your time at Clacton?
Yes. In those days, when you went away to college, until you were 21, you were a child, and so the college stood in loco parentis for you, so you had to sign in every night and you had to be in by 10:30 regardless. Well, the cinema didn't finish till 10:30, so the girls in the college never ever saw the end of a film, because we'd all have to dash out 10 minutes before it finished to run home to get back to college and sign in. So in all those years, I never saw the end of a film.
Oh, right. So perhaps the daytime television these days, you can catch up on all those films that you've missed.
Probably, yes. The one thing that we did every day, we watched Magic Roundabout. It was on just before we were queuing up to go into a meal.
I remember those days when there were pirate radio stations off the coast of Clacton and Frinton. And Frinton apparently is a posh bit of the area. Did you ever go up to Frinton?
Yes, we did, but we didn't have any transport. We biked, but no, we were generally much in Clacton. But I was there when the pirate radio ship got blown off its moorings and it was floating inwards, and there was big to do. All the girls knew that they were in trouble, because if the police caught them inside the radius of where they should be, it would be a problem. But they managed to get going and back out again.
Right, teacher training, and no doubt you passed what you needed to pass at teacher training. So what happened next?
Well, in those days, if you had a grant from your county council, you had to go back and teach in your area for 2 years. And so I went back and taught in Leicester for 2 years. I taught in what they called a dustbin school, because they used to expel people for all sorts of reasons. But the school I was in, there was no expulsion because there was no lower to go.
So when you say you had to go back to the same council, does that mean that you had a job waiting for you?
You had a job, but you didn't have any option which school it was in.
What was your thinking then of progressing?
I didn't think like that. I thoroughly enjoyed my 2 years there. I started a Christian fellowship while I was there. They used to meet in my parents' house sometimes on a Saturday. Many, many, many years later, my mum rang me up. She'd been to the women's meeting at church, and a young woman had been speaking at the meeting, and she said that she had been converted through a teacher who'd come to the school. My mum sort of thought, that sounds like our Chris. So she went and spoke to her, and it was the school that I'd been in. So that was lovely, because I didn't know about that at all.
Well, that's an encouragement. Just tell the listeners what subjects you were teaching.
I was a home economics teacher, and we had three big rooms, and every room had sort of 12 different little kitchens in it. The teacher was in charge of the room with the girls. We had a lot of immigrant families. It was at 60s. I often had a class full of kids who didn't speak English. And so I taught cookery by holding up a bag of flour, holding up a tablespoon and counting one, two. And that was how we went on quite a lot of the time.
How did you progress from that? Because you didn't end up doing home economics, you moved on to other things.
Yes, after 3 years, the system of education changed to comprehensive education, and my subject really disappeared. It became just 1-hour lessons, and that wasn't what I wanted to do at all. But that was when I was having my children. So when I'd had my children, I started going in as a mum helper, then got asked if I'd do supply teaching. That was a funny story because the head teacher asked me if I'd do supply. It was about the third week of the term and it was a new reception class. I went in and did this day, had a wonderful day. It was such fun. I thought, wow, this is good. And at the end of the day, she said to me, by the way, the teacher's broken a leg. You'll be here for 6 weeks. And I just thought, I haven't a clue what I'm doing. But the rest of the staff helped me. And I mean, in those days, there was no national curriculum or anything. So yes, I muddled through.
This was in Leicester. You hadn't moved by that time.
No, after I'd finished my 3 years in Leicester teaching, that was when I got married, 1968, and moved to Somerset.
Right. This was down here that you effectively fell on your feet, or how you'd like to say it, moved into teaching proper. And how did you progress from there?
It was a few years because I didn't go into supply teaching until Nick was 5 and James was 7. So I had quite a few years when I didn't teach at all, although we'd started a children's group in our own home. And we had about 26 kids who came every week to our house to do Bible study and Bible searching, stories, singing, that sort of thing, and craft work.
So how did you reconnect with the church down here?
First of all, we were living in Wells, and we went to church in Cheddar and to the Gospel Hall. And then when we had quite a few parents who began to be interested in wanting to come to church, we thought we can't drag them all the way to Cheddar. So we looked for a church in Wells, and we went to the United Church in the middle of Wells. So that was Baptist and URC.
The children are growing up now. That's when you decided to push your career a bit further.
Yes, I did supply teaching until Nick was 10. And then I got a what you might call a full-time job. Then a bit later on, people kept saying to me, you ought to be a head teacher. And I thought, I can't do that. So I thought, well, the only way I can do it is if I do some more training. So I went to UWE and did a master's degree over 3 years, night, evening classes and distance learning, and got my master's degree. And I got my degree just about the time that I applied for and got my first headship job.
And where was that headship job?
I was at Norton St Philip, and I was there until I retired.
Wow, so you've seen a lot in education, a lot of changes.
Yes, changes galore. I mean, the national curriculum came in and then they changed every subject at different times. Yes, lots of new curriculum coming in and new ways of assessing, and it just seemed to go on and on and on changing, and I have a feeling it still is.
What point did you move to Midsummer Norton and perhaps find a new church here?
Colin worked for, he was a building surveyor, and he worked for Cluttons in Wells for quite a long time, and then he began to work for himself for the MOD down in Podimore, near Podimore roundabout. We realised that we were both travelling very peculiar distances. It was quite difficult to sort of organise our lives. So we drew arcs on a map, and the arc hit Midsummer Norton. We moved to Midsummer Norton, but we were only there about 3 years before Colin was ill. He died a couple of years after that. I've been in Midsummer Norton now 20-something years, yes.
You're well established here. You're not a newcomer like myself. I know you as being at Welton Baptist, but when did you join Welton Baptist Church?
Well, when we were looking for a new home and a new church, we, as I said, put arcs on the map and it hit Midsummer Norton. So we went looking, got all these house details, and we realised that if we were going to move, we had to move my parents as well, because they had become quite dependent on us and they lived near us in Wells. So we started looking around for a house with an annex, and we had 3 different properties that we could go and look at. One was at Wellowbrook Meadow, one was in Station Road, and one was Welton Farmhouse. And when we went to look at them, they were 3 houses virtually next door to each other. The Welton Farmhouse and the Station Road were exactly opposite each other, and just round the corner from the Welton Farmhouse was our house that we eventually bought. When we were there, we thought, why does God want us to be here? There must be something, you know, these three houses are so close together. This is really weird. So we thought, right, we'll go for a walk. So we walked to the end of the road and around the corner and found Welton Baptist Church and remembered that back about two winters before, I'd been on headship course with all the heads of Somerset and had met Paul Mitchell. And I met him because I was wearing a cross in my lapel. He spoke to me and he told me about Welton. Colin and I actually had been down one Sunday evening, and as soon as we walked up this road, we said, this is where we came to church that evening. So that confirmed it to us, and 6 weeks later we moved in.
You always seem to be quite a busy lady, and I'm sure you was busy in those days. Did you get involved in any way in the church other than being in the congregation?
The church at Norton St Philip I got involved with. We ran a prayer group for the school, and I did quite a lot with the church there. But I also, at Welton, Colin and I became house group leaders, and Colin became an elder. So we were quite involved there as well.
Something else I've noticed, you seem to be a bit of a dab hand with technology. I watched you recently using your smartphone and you seem to know your way around it. Are you quite comfortable with technology?
Yes, I started with technology when our boys were little. They had a ZX. I sort of learnt with them. Colin and I, we both learnt. And then being in schools, you obviously taught computer studies in primary schools. And being a head teacher, I was doing computers in the classroom, but I also had a computer in the office, which was a completely different system. So I got used to two systems. And so, yes, I've always been very interested in technology.
By the sounds of it, you've always been a busy person. Has retirement meant you've slowed down, or are you just as busy as you ever were?
I'm fairly busy, but I'm also fairly careful how much I take on. I've learnt from experience that you can be a yes person who says yes to everything, and then it becomes a burden. So now I always pray and ask God, is this what I'm meant to be doing? And so I stick with the things that I feel. I do Christian counselling because I trained as that after I retired, and I do I run a house group with two other ladies. I do the prayer diary and odd bits and pieces, and I'm on the missionary committee, and I've always been very interested in mission.
Just to touch on some things like hobbies and things you do, you did home economics. That must make you a really good cook.
I wouldn't say I'm a good cook. I'm a good plain cook. But I also do crochet. I don't like knitting. But handicrafts and making things has always been something that Colin and I did. I like travelling, but mostly I've travelled in this country. We've always camped. Colin and I built a camping trailer when we were first married. There was one in I think it was called the Mirror camping trailer that you could buy in bits and make up. Well, we didn't buy that. Colin designed one for himself, and I stitched all the canvas on my machine. So making things has always been something we do, and I still camp to this day. I have a caravan down in Devon.
There's lots of lovely countryside and scenery and places to go in this country, and I'm sure you've seen quite a lot.
Yes, I'm a member of the National Trust and English Heritage, and have always, when we went on holiday, those were the things we did with the kids. We didn't pay to go anywhere else. We had our membership and we went to those things when we were away camping, or just nature in the wild.
And no doubt most of those camping trips were in this country. Did you go perhaps to Ireland or Europe?
We went to Europe. We went over to Bruges and Brussels, France, Germany. More recently, I've camped in Austria and various places. And I went with Sue Kirby on a holiday to the Andalusia area.
It sounds as though you've got a bit of a creative streak running through you, and you really enjoy creating things and creation as well. Tell the listeners a little bit of some of the things you make and do.
I've done a machine embroidery, which goes on my bed. It's like a bed stole. And it is actually a picture of a scene down in Mort Hoe.
Having said that you're interested in creative things and camping, and that sort of links into God's creation.
Yes, I love creation. I love going out in the countryside. I love being by the sea. I love walking, and I do a lot of walking. I walk every day. So yes, creation means an awful lot to me. And I think the Psalms and parts of the Bible that really speak to me are very often about that. But my favourite verse is, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." And it's the own understanding bit that seems so important. I constantly say to myself, hang on a minute, that's what you think, but I wonder what God thinks. So I pull myself up and say, I've got to trust God and not try and work out my own way of thinking.
Now, thinking of the future, there's always something going on. We've got possibility of the chapel being refurbished and there's new people joining the church. Are you encouraged by what you see?
Yes, very encouraged. I'm really pleased to see what's going on with the chapel at the moment. I live near it, so it's a real bonus for me too. Yes, I mean, I'm very involved in my house group. It's a ladies' group and they're just a lovely group of ladies and we grew very close together during the pandemic.
Yeah, and I can see your technology skills coming to the fore there.
Yeah, I think the ladies were a little shocked when I got them all online doing WhatsApp and made the WhatsApp group. And then the next week I said, right, now we're going to all download Zoom. And one by one I went round, I phoned each one and over the phone got them to download it. But we managed and we did it. And yes, it was a very valuable tool for us.
Well done, Chris. I'd just like to thank you for this interview. It's been a real honour and pleasure to hear your story. And I'm sure there's lots of bits we've missed out and there's probably lots of things that could add. And if there's anybody listening that would just want to come up and chat to you on a Sunday, pick up on anything, I'm sure you'd welcome that. And so thank you once again.
I think I've been very fortunate that I've always been aware of God in my life. I've always felt very clearly each step, God guiding me on to the next step and having quite a clear path ahead of me. You know, when I lost my husband and you sort of think, gosh, where do I go from here? There's always a new way forward. And I would say that to anybody who's going through a difficult patch. You know, God will see you through and just trust him and go with it.
Wise words. And thank you once again, Chris.
Thank you.